This is Circulating Ideas. I'm Steve Thomas. My guest today is Rebecca Smith-Aldrich. She is the coordinator for library sustainability at the Mid-Hudson Library System in New York and is the author of Sustainable Thinking, Ensuring Your Library's Future in an Uncertain World. Circulating Ideas is brought to you with support from Unique Management Services and from listeners like you. Unique Management Services is the worldwide leader in material recovery for libraries with a proven track record of professional and effective communication with library patrons. Unique also offers inbound phone and live chat coverage for public libraries. Are incoming phone calls creating an operational and customer service challenge for your library? Are the communication options on your website inconvenient for online patrons and limited to library hours? Unique solves these problems with phone and chat coverage that make virtual service a snap for patrons. From renewing items to downloading ebooks to reserving meeting rooms, Unique offers flexible service formats to keep patrons engaged and active and give library staff more time for in-house patron and key job tasks. Unique Patron Service Solutions, virtual service solved. Visit uniquelibrary.com to learn more and schedule your free demo. That's uniquelibrary.com. Rebecca, welcome to Circulating Ideas.
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate the chance to be on Circulating Ideas.
So we're going to talk about a lot of stuff today, but I wanted to start off with sort of a two-part question of how did you get into libraries in the first place, and then how did you get into this sort of unique part of librarianship?
Sure. My family was a big library family. My dad made sure we went to the library. Both my parents made sure we went to the library pretty routinely, and he actually became a library trustee for about a decade. And he thought it would be cool if there was a junior trustee position to pad my college application. So I totally geeked out and did that. And then he suggested I go to library school because the university I went to had a joint program to get your bachelor's and master's quicker. And end up with a library degree. So I immediately did not do that and went on a different course. I pursued a career helping victims of domestic violence and eventually burned out from that. And then lo and behold, my dad once again suggested libraries, and he slipped me a job ad for the Mid-Hudson Library System. And I came here working on a couple of grants from IMLS, helping libraries with fundraising. And I did a project on health information and then building the base of support that libraries have in their communities. And that ended up parlaying into a full-time job here as a library development consultant for 66 public libraries here in the Hudson Valley of New York. So I focus primarily on basically making sure my libraries win at the polls, because here in New York, libraries have direct voter say over their budgets, which means they're going out for votes, and that's a pretty definitive way to figure out if your community supports you or not. So all the work I do, whether it be helping trustees, managers and directors, figuring out how to talk to communities and message to communities effectively, all of that has to add up to our libraries winning at the polls to make sure they have the operating funds that they need. So over the course of my career, I've done a lot of work to help our libraries really listen to their communities and hear what it is communities are either struggling with or dreaming of, and making sure libraries are designing programs and services that really speak to their particular community, because that's what people will invest in. They'll invest when they see their own goals reflected in a community organization. And so that's where I started on my path. And then I know you asked specifically, how did I get into this kind of area of sustainability specifically? Right. Another part of my job is administering the State Aid for Library Construction Program. So when I started on that maybe, 15 years ago, we used to get like $30,000 from the state. And this year, I'm proud to report, particularly since I'm chair of the New York Library Association's Legislative Committee, we just got a record $34 million in construction aid statewide, so we'll be getting close to $1 million here in Mid-Hudson this year for our member libraries.
That's great.
And so my job is to make sure that money gets spent as effectively and efficiently as possible on behalf of the residents. And I had a particular interest in making sure buildings were built in a sustainable way, both to keep operating costs down and because they're just healthier for the people who use them and the people who live in the areas where products are created to build buildings. But I was having a really hard time selling library boards on building sustainably because it has this kind of stigma of costing a lot more than traditional construction. So I realized I had to get better at making the case for why building sustainably was something libraries should be doing, and we had to figure out how to do it in a cost-effective way, and that really set me off on a decade-long path of learning more about sustainability and how libraries fit into that world. And that's, you know, kind of where I am today. Is that's where the book came out of, is that journey I took for the past decade to figure that all out.
And was this anything that you sort of were interested in before, or did this kind of come up as part of this is the job you got, and then it kind of grew from there?
No, I was definitely interested in it as a teenager. I was thinking back on this recently. We had like an environmental club in high school, and I was definitely like one of like the four people in the environmental club. so I definitely had an interest in it because it always just seemed so common sense to me, and I struggled to understand why a lot of the things that were good for the earth, which means they were good for us, weren't already institutionalized in our organizations and our government. So it's always been strange to me that the right thing wasn't necessarily getting done. We certainly see that change over the past decade, and that's been getting better and better. There's certainly a lot of work to be done, though, given the state of the environment currently. And that, you know, can't be a standalone issue. And that's what the kind of journey has been, to understand that nothing happens in isolation. So untangling that holistic thinking about how the environmental choices we make tie into economic choices and social equity choices, and it's not just one choice we're making, but it has to be a whole philosophy we live by rather than a checklist we use to get through our lives.
And that's good as a kind of like a general principle thing, but why do you think generally, why do you think more specifically libraries should be leaders on the environment?
In particular, I mean, libraries are education, right? We are educators in our communities, and we can be exemplars for the people that we serve. So if a very, libraries are extremely trusted in our organizations. We've seen that come out survey after survey, that librarians and libraries as institutions are highly trusted. So if a trusted institution is making better choices and leading the way on that topic, our ability to influence better choices by more and more people is huge. And I don't see libraries or enough libraries stepping into that role to own it and to say, like, hey, we believe in this and we're making the right choices and here's how we're doing it. You know, come learn with us on this journey. So I think, you know, libraries have almost an awesome opportunity, if not platform, if not obligation, to be making better choices on behalf of their communities and how they operate their buildings and what they choose to focus their energy on when it comes to community aspirations and program design. So I do think libraries do need to shift a bit from reacting to things that happen to owning the fact that this is work that needs to be done in our communities and we are going to do it. We don't need to be told to do it or asked to do it. We know it needs to get done. Let's get to it.
Well, you mentioned your book earlier, so I wanted to mention that it is Sustainable Thinking, Ensuring Your Library's Future in an Uncertain World. And you talked about what kind of led up to that, but what made you actually want to put it into a book? What was that, the book project itself? What was the genesis of that?
That's an awesome question, because for the past 7 years, I was like, what was I thinking when I did this? In 2009, Library Journal named me as a mover and shaker, and I think there's like a form letter that goes out at the time from ALA Editions inviting any mover and shaker if they'd like to do a book proposal. They were open to that. And I'm like, well, I'm doing all this work on sustainability. I don't really see that happening in other parts of library literature, and I'd like to see the dial move on this issue. Maybe a book is the way to do that. But at the time, I really didn't understand what was needed. And so it was a very long journey to put into words in a simplistic way that wasn't overwhelming to people the message I was trying to send. And it ended up being quite the odyssey to get to where we are today with that book finally coming out. It looks much, much different than the proposal that I put together back in probably 2010, 2011.
Well, yeah, I mean, it spreads a lot. I mean, it covers a lot in a short little book, and it really does. You did a really good job of simplifying everything down, because it could be like a series of books, the subject matter that you've covered in there.
And let's be honest, people aren't going to read a series of books on that topic. And I think living in the public library world, one of the things, a huge part of my job is helping out library directors, and you know, they have one of the toughest jobs out there in terms of the breadth of stuff they have to be focused on and keeping an eye on and staying on top of and communicating. So my member library directors here at Mid-Hudson have taught me over time that if I don't get to the point quickly, they're not going to pay attention to that issue. So over the years, I've really tried to fine-tune boiling things down to their essence. What do you really need to know? How would you get started on this issue? Why does it matter? How do you sell it to other people? I have to really be concise in that. And then I've been really lucky the past 2.5 years to work with a group of library peers here in New York through the New York Library Association Sustainability Initiative, who have also helped fine-tune some of this thinking and how we convey these ideas. There's a great member of our committee, Kate McCaffrey from the Northern Onondaga Public Library, and she was on our team who built something called the Roadmap to Sustainability, which I'm happy to share with everyone. But her mantra was keep it simple, keep it simple, keep it simple. And that was a great reminder because I will spin off on this topic and go into the weeds on it, and then I lose people. So it was a great reminder for me to stay in the middle of the lane and really stick to stuff people really need to know that's practical.
Well, speaking of simplicity, you are the coordinator for library sustainability as your job title. You write a sustainability column for Library Journal. Can you define what library sustainability is?
Yeah, you know, the simplest way I describe it to people is, do the libraries I work with have the capacity to endure? So it's really just taking the Merriam-Webster definition for sustainability, the capacity to endure. And how do we ensure our libraries have that? How do we make sure the residents trust our libraries, are willing to invest in them, both from a financial standpoint and a goodwill standpoint? Much of a library's success has to do with its reputation. So there's a lot of components that go into that, to making sure people think libraries are a good investment for tax dollars and for private donations and for a place to really believe in and find hope in the midst of, you know, the chaos that is our world these days. So it was I don't know if I meant to do it, but back in 2010, my longtime executive director was retiring, and I realized I have a really strange job. When I looked around the other public library systems in New York, no one was doing the work that I was doing, and my title was kind of nondescript. I used to be the coordinator for member information, which said a bunch of nothing. So when I had to really get to the core of why do I do the work that I do on behalf of our members, it was all about making sure they have a great reputation and they're able to pass their budget votes and that they thrive on behalf of their communities. And so that's why I chose the word sustainability for my job title. And then I've spent the past 8 years explaining why it doesn't just mean I help build green buildings. To expand people's mind is the opportunity I have through the Library Journal column to help people understand that sustainability, in its, you know, the definition that we've chosen to use here in New York, is based on something called the triple bottom line, which creates a balance amongst not only environmental stewardship, but economic feasibility and social equity. And that lens of the triple bottom line of sustainability, you can apply not just to a building, but an organization or a product or a community. And that's really exciting to talk to people about that, because it helps them see the whole picture in a way that makes sense to them, that it's not about the hippies over there trying to green everything or the fiscal conservatives trying to keep costs down. It's finding common ground amongst those sometimes polarizing viewpoints where we can come together and build something better for us all.
And how do you think public libraries are doing in the U.S., and maybe specifically in New York, since that's what you focus on, but how do you think we're doing in the public discourse at this point?
I think it's a work in progress. I think what we're seeing here in New York is really exciting, which are libraries who are getting it. A lot of times libraries are doing a lot of awesome stuff, but they're not great at talking about why they do what they do. And that's a real stumbling block, because we get so frustrated when people, you know, don't understand what a modern library does, or even those people, detractors who don't understand why libraries even exist anymore. And instead of sputtering and getting exasperated and saying, we're more than just books, like, you know, what I always try to help libraries do in my consulting business when I do advocacy training is, you have to come from a place of confidence, and you have to be comfortable with the role that we're playing in our community and own what we're doing in a way that you can articulate the why behind the what. Why do we do story time? Why do we have public access computers? Why are we staunch supporters of privacy and intellectual freedom? This is not just being educators for education's sake. How do we talk about the higher goal that we have to help our communities be the best they can be? So I think libraries are doing a lot of great stuff, but there's a lot of work to be done in terms of messaging as well as where current resources are being allocated. And, you know, I think we need a little more confidence and bravery in reallocating our resources, whether it be staff time, square footage, how we build our collections, to think, you know, more future-focused about that and not just follow the same patterns we've been following for the past few decades. So I definitely think there's work to be done. As a colleague of mine says, sustainability is a journey, not a destination. So we're taking a mindset of continuous improvement on this topic.
What are libraries doing wrong as far as public messaging goes, and what can they be doing better?
I don't know if they're doing something wrong, but I think it's something they could be amplifying more, which is why we do the work that we do in libraries. I had an interesting experience back in December of 2016. The co-chair of the New York Library Association Sustainability Initiative, Matt Bollerman, and I were invited to speak at the Director Summit that Library Journal puts on out in Sacramento, California. And so there we are in a room with 100 library directors, and these are directors of some of the largest libraries in the country, which is not where Matt and I sit here in New York. We're dealing with suburban libraries, and so we were a little, you know, nervous. We wanted to make sure we did a good job, and we're talking in their world about the stuff we wanted to convey. And we challenged ourselves to go and look at all 100 libraries that were represented in the room for our workshop. Before we got there, we went and looked at all of their websites. And we had a little matrix for ourselves. You know, was their mission clear? Did they talk about sustainability at all? In their annual report to the community, was it just an itemization of stuff that they had and things that they did? Or was there a unifying message about why they do those things? Because if we're disappointed that people don't understand it, and yet we never say it ourselves, that is our fault. And it was really interesting, because out of that 100, it started to shake out very clearly. It was actually bizarre at the end of it. The libraries that did the best job talking about why they do what they do, a really empowering mission and vision statement, woven through all of their messaging were their commitment to the success of their community, to being good stewards of the resources they're given. The libraries that echoed that and amplified it over and over again in their messaging through their website, the two that did it the best were also national award winners. It was interesting. They may have won for a specific program or initiative that they did, but they were also the ones we identified as best at talking about why they do the things that they do. Right. And I think that's a really great example of, you know, maybe salesmanship, maybe it's some kind of public relations training, but it really doesn't take more than a turn of a phrase here and there to help people get why we do what we do. That it's not story time and a snack, but there's actually science behind what we're doing. We're actually very focused on early literacy, which, you know, leads to lifetime success, and statistics back that up. But we rarely talk about that. We'll provide a calendar of events that itemizes story time every Tuesday. Here's our themes. Here's the craft. You know, here's the fun speakers we have coming in, or the jugglers we have coming in for summer reading. Rarely is that coupled with the message about education, early literacy, you know, empowering parents to do well for their children. And that's the kind of messaging that we need to focus on more in the future in order to get the attention and market share we need to be a relevant and powerful force in our communities, which is what our communities need from us most right now.
Yeah, and what you talk about in the book as well is that we've generally, libraries have been reactive to things, and we need to be pushing to be more proactive.
Yeah, definitely. I think, and I always feel bad, like, criticizing libraries about this, because these are the libraries I work with, and, like, I see how much is on their plate and all the things they have to do. But to really complete the cycle of cultivating a sustainable library and really contributing to a sustainable community, there has to be a really strong PR component. So I'm really heartened to see more and more of my libraries, which I would say are mid to small rural libraries, they're devoting actual staff time to public relations. It's not just by hook or by crook we get the word out. They're actually being more deliberate, strategic, you know, deploying tactics, editorial calendars, staff time is actually paid to get the word out about what we're doing instead of just, like, hoping the program remembers to get the flyer out, you know. So that's, I think, important. So I'm definitely not criticizing. I'm just saying we've got some work to do on this front that I think we're all kind of struggling with in our field on that topic. I think ALA does a nice job of giving us kind of unifying themes that we can build upon, libraries transform, libraries transforming communities. Those are cool things to be focused on, but I do think they need to be shifted and refocused to very local language that really resonates with the people that you serve. And that's the kind of work that we're excited to help our libraries with in the coming years.
Right. You can't just order a Libraries Transform poster and put it up and go, hey, we did it.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's something that we see over and over again, this veneer we put on ourselves and hope people just get it. But do we actually live that message? Is our long-range plan focused on transforming lives? Are our programs focused on transforming lives? Sometimes we have to ask ourselves those hard questions. And if we're not producing programs and services and outputs and outcomes that actually make a difference and take the time to measure those differences, we're not being authentic and genuine. And that's another, you know, service point we're working on here at MidHudson. And we're bringing in Project Outcome from PLA to help libraries tell the story of the impact they have in their community, because that's got to be part of our storytelling toolbox.
What I like is that in the book that you have a lot of tools in there. You have worksheets that actually help people get their hands dirty and actually do the work that they need to do and not just think about it sort of generally, but actually really get down to it and actually think through things.
Yeah, and I have a personal learning style where writing something down is really key for me. And my editor at ALA Editions, Jamie Santoro, when I was kind of interviewing her about, I've never written a book, I don't know what I'm doing, could she give me some tips? One of the questions I asked her was, what was the best-selling book ALA Editions has ever sold? And it's How to Be a Great Boss. And I got the book and I took a look at it and I loved how it was just short and there were little worksheets that helped you think through the issues you were learning about and maybe helped you create a little action plan for yourself. And I thought, this topic of sustainability is so enormous. And that's the feedback I've been getting for so long when I do talks, which I've been doing, you know, for 10 years now on the topic. It's like people are like so psyched about the topic. They like, it clicks for them, they get it, and then the inevitable question is, okay, where do I start? And that's a big question because it really depends on where are you now.
Right.
And what are your opportunities? Who's on your team? Where do you live in the country? I mean, all sorts of things come into play to figure out where do you start. And so through the process we went through here in New York, through the New York Library Association Sustainability Initiative to develop our roadmap to sustainability, one of the findings we arrived at was that it's got to start person by person. That if you yourself individually can't articulate these ideas in a way that makes sense to you and the people around you, you're not going to get very far. So I really wanted to try to, you know, find a way to help people get to that understanding as well as reflect on it, but then importantly take action on it, because that's my concern, that we're all just talking about this stuff, but we're not serious enough about doing something in a big way, and because that's what it's really going to take in the coming years to be impactful, is to really actually boots on the ground, doing things differently, talking about things differently. And I think, you know, anyone in an organization might be the catalyst to get that conversation going in their library. And I'm hoping the worksheets in the book can help individuals find their voice on the topic and feel more confident and comfortable that they can speak about this topic in a way that will resonate with people.
Well, another tool you talk about in the book is the Golden Circle from Simon Sinek. Can you talk a little bit about that? That's from his book, Start With Why.
Start With Why, yeah. I totally, one of the things I try to explain to people about the work I do here at MidHudson is I'm not a library director. I'm a library consultant. And my job as a consultant is to look for patterns. What makes these libraries over here successful? Why did this library fail on something, or why were they not so successful when they tried these things? And can I, you know, identify patterns and recognize patterns that help the next library build on the success of the libraries that came before them and avoid the pitfalls the libraries before them also discovered along the way? And Simon Sinek is a business consultant doing the same thing for businesses. And the Golden Circle is a pattern he's identified for successful businesses. That when, you know, and libraries are, this is just what we were talking about before, how libraries are great at itemizing what we have to offer. Here's our new books, check out our new 3D printer, look at all these amazing programs we have, and that's what we do. But again, it's not clear why we're doing those things to people who are not, you know, all in library devotees. So the Golden Circle posits that, you know, in his world, businesses that start their messaging with why they do what they do more quickly connect with consumers, because it connects with their heart. It connects with what they're passionate about, because they might believe in the same things that company believes in. And in the book, he gives some excellent examples of this, Apple being one of the primary ones. When Apple started talking about why they do what they do, which was to bust the status quo in the tech industry, that really resonated with baby boomers who were coming out of the 60s who really wanted to bust the status quo themselves, or think of themselves as people who could bust the status quo and not be the man, you know, that they grew up with. And so that really resonated with people, and people are crazy loyal to that brand. And part of it's because of the technique they use with their messaging, which is to start with why they do what they do, instead of just geeking out about the specs of the tech. And this, you know, really came home for me a couple years ago. We had a board president here at Mid-Hudson, Jesse Feiler, who writes books for Apple and teaches classes. He's like a pro power user of Apple products. And he was telling me he was going on vacation on a cruise that was just for people who loved Apple products. And I'm thinking to myself, how do you build that kind of loyalty to your brand? And what do libraries have to do to get that kind of loyalty that you would spend your time off going on vacation with other people who love the same thing you do? And I think it really is this basic idea, this basic premise of talking about what we do in a very different way, and more time and energy being focused on why we do what we do instead of the specifics of what we're doing.
One of the quotes that I like in the book is where you say, meeting people where they are in life rather than expecting them to meet you where you are as a library is a key component to a sustainable library. What I like about that is because it's putting libraries kind of as part of the community. It's not just kind of we're this thing off to the side that people can come to do stuff. It's that we interact with our community. I feel like that's a big part of that. And that's a big part, I think, of being a sustainable library too.
That really came from two people who really inspired me in my life. One is my coworker, Mary Beth Advocate, who always talks about how important it is to be people-centric instead of library-centric in our messaging. And she helped build some of the first websites here in the system for our libraries. And she noticed libraries were always talking about what they had to offer, not why it mattered to our patrons. And she's like a precursor to Simon Sinek in that way. Another guy who really influenced me was Jim Farrell, who used to work at the New York State Library, and now he's a library director. And when he finally became a library director of a public library, one of the first things he did was change customer service training. And he would talk about, you know, instilling excitement amongst the staff so that they would ask their community, and this was kind of their mantra for a while, what do you want to do today? And for the staff to be excited about what people want to learn about. When someone, you know, a kid comes in and they want to learn more about dinosaurs, not just to be like, okay, those books are over here, but to be like, wow, dinosaurs, that's so cool. Like, high five, man, let's go figure that out. You know, to like really, you know, be energized by what the community wants to do. Instead of, you know, thinking they should be energized by what we want to do as libraries, because we're kind of boring most of the time, you know? We still have debates about the word database and the Dewey Decimal System, and, you know, nobody but us really cares about that kind of stuff. So it's like, again, repositioning and using the language of those we serve rather than ourselves to make sure we're connecting with people in a meaningful way.
So we're talking about making these kind of not big changes in what libraries are doing necessarily, but how we communicate them. But that can be really difficult for especially staff. A lot of times leadership can make that change over, but bringing your staff with you to change that way we talk about libraries. Can you talk a little bit about change leadership and how we can help transition the whole library into this sort of new way of doing things, or new way of communicating things?
Yeah, sure. I want to be clear. I do think it means we need to do things differently too, not just talk about things differently. I definitely think there's room for improvement in terms of how we operate our buildings, how we, you know, choose the partnerships we pursue, and the programs and services we design. So I think when we want to change the whole mindset or any kind of major cultural shift in an organization, there's change management theory for how to do that. In the book, I outline a three-phase project, or process rather, that came from a great article at MIT Sloan. That talks about the need for a leader to be able to articulate and make the case for change, to be able to explain why and how, you know, what's going to be needed in the future is going to look different from where we were in the past, and help inspire people to bring them along and empower them to find actual solutions that are necessary in the future. So you have to be able to translate that vision you have for the future into action. And any good leader knows you can't do that by yourself. You need buy-in from the people around you for changes large and small. You know, for libraries that are tackling eliminating fines right now, you need to build consensus around that issue and explain the why behind the what in order to get people to buy into it and be able to speak about it eloquently at the front desk or online or when challenged by someone on the topic. So if we're thinking about something as large as, you know, shifting our mindset to be, you know, community-focused in a way that actually speaks to the triple bottom line we were discussing before, that's a very heavy lift. So in terms of change management, you've got that making the case for change. You have to bring people along with you to the understanding you've already achieved on the topic, which that's where the book is designed to help you kind of get better at articulating that yourself. Because most of the things we're talking about, library people really believe in, but they maybe haven't spoken about it in a cohesive way before that can, you know, inspire people and bring them to the same level of understanding. And then the next phase is to translate that vision into action with people helping you do that. The meeting I was in earlier before I got on the phone with you today was our sustainability team at Mid-Hudson. And we're, you know, starting that process. And they had to be, you know, brought along over the course of a year to get to the actual work that needed to be done to make better choices in the organization. And then once you're getting there, you can start to expand your boundaries and, you know, find new partnerships and cast out and be talking about what we do in new and different ways so that people outside of your organization are inspired by what you're doing and help you do it, whether it be by voting yes or donating their time and energy or giving you a high five when they see you in the community. You have to be cohesive in that effort and really deliberate in that effort. It has to be strategic. It can't happen overnight.
Yeah, and you really have to. Yeah, you have to have thought it through first before you can convince anybody else of
exactly
what you're wanting to do.
Yeah.
And that's what a lot of the tools I think in the book can help with, and the Golden Circle and all the other worksheets and everything that you have, because it's really about making sure you think this through. The last thing I wanted to ask you about, a little smaller topic or maybe a big topic, is you're on the sustainability roundtable with ALA. What kind of work do you guys do to communicate to members?
Yeah, the sustainability roundtable is the newest roundtable of the American Library Association. And it's really that awesome thing that ALA can do for people, which is to help you find your community of practice. You know, people who are passionate about the same things you are. To really help, you know, bring the best minds on the topic together so you can identify what's going on, what's working, how do you amplify what's working so other people learn from that, and then identify, you know, what needs to be done as an association to move forward. And it's been an exciting experience to be with other people from all types of libraries all across the country who are thinking about these same things and finding, you know, new and diverse ways to tackle the issues. So, you know, Christina, your colleague, she got the blog started so we could start sharing out these ideas that were just kind of floating out there, and every once in a while there'd be an article in American Libraries or Library Journal about it. But here we're creating this clearinghouse of information of here's what people are doing. These are the impacts they're having. Here's a way you never thought of tackling this issue that this awesome person over here figured out. So I think, you know, it's still very nascent and new, but we've got some exciting things going on. One was in 2015, the group spearheaded passing the resolution on the importance of sustainable libraries through ALA Council. And this really was the, I think, kind of the impetus we needed. We needed top-level buy-in to this idea of sustainable libraries and the role we can play in contributing to a more sustainable future, because we could be talking about it at the grassroots level, but to see honest, real, genuine change come through, that's a big lift that we all need to be on board for. And so in 2015, getting that resolution passed through the roundtable, you know, through council was a major moment, I think, and I'm obviously biased on this, but I think a major moment in the history of libraries in the United States, because it really forced people to think about it not as that checklist idea, but that mindset, that philosophy we need to move forward with. So through that, the council, the executive board of council, formed a special task force on sustainability, which I co-chair. And we're about to launch into the public input gathering phase of writing a white paper to define for the association, the profession, and libraries, what does it look like to contribute to a more sustainable and resilient community and world? And that's a big topic, and it's an exciting topic. And the work that's going on in our libraries right now throughout the country, if not the world, this is one of the best times in our history to be bringing those minds together to share that information. Because I think the scope and scale of the stuff we are all facing as humans right now is enormous. And if we can't find a way to effectively collaborate and share ideas, we're all just in these kind of dark corners of our communities figuring things out on our own. And we can accelerate our ability to be impactful and be the resources our community needs by, you know, working together on these topics. And ALA is facilitating that, which is really cool, finally. So the white paper that will come out from that task force, we'll see at ALA Annual in June in New Orleans, which I'm extremely excited about.
So, Rebecca, thank you so much for being on the show and for sharing your ideas. And we look forward to hearing more about the white paper and the other work that you're doing, including people should read your book, Sustainable Thinking. And if they wanted to follow up with you in the meantime about this conversation or about anything else with sustainable libraries, how can they get in touch with you?
Yeah, I have a Facebook page called Sustainable Libraries where I connect with people from all over the world, so that's a great spot. Also on Twitter at Rebecca, R-E-B-E-K-K-A-H, and I love connecting with other library people to hear what's going on and get feedback on my work. I have a new book coming out in June called Resilience as part of the ALA Center for the Future of Libraries series, so I'll have more to share later this year.
All right, thank you so much, Rebecca, and thank you for powering through your cold.
Oh, thank you, Steve, so much for the opportunity to speak to your listeners.
Circulating Ideas is produced by Steve Thomas in the suburbs of Atlanta. Views expressed on this show do not necessarily reflect those of my place of work or the place of work of guests. For past interviews, visit circulatingideas.com and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, Overcast, or your podcast app of choice. And help others find the show by leaving a rating or review. You can follow the show on Twitter at @CircIdeas or like the show's Facebook page. Music is by Pamela Klicka. Thank you for listening and keep circulating your ideas.
This is like the most editing you've ever had to do for a podcast. I'm so sorry.
It is not, actually.
Oh, okay, good.
Surprising. Thanks again to our sponsor, Unique Management Services, offering inbound phone and chat coverage to help libraries deliver outstanding virtual service to patrons. Unique Patron Service Solutions, virtual service solved. Visit uniquelibrary.com to learn more and schedule your free demo. That's uniquelibrary.com.